Welcome to the Hyphen Church Podcast, where faith meets the spaces in between. We're here to explore what it means to belong, to grow, and to encounter God in the midst of life's questions and complexities. Whether you're here to listen, reflect, or take a step forward, know that you're in the right place. Let's make space together for what God is doing in us and through us. Now, let's dive into today's message.
This week, we're going to explore a little bit deeper into faith and what Jesus has called us to, understanding how the disciples continue to get it wrong in their pursuit of faith and in their pursuit of all the things that God has given to them. And Jesus, once again, here in Luke, gives us this surprise answer. And what does obedient faith look like? When we live in a posture of faith, we look like this. Luke 17, verses 1 through 10. Jesus said to his disciples, "Things that cause people to stumble are bound to come, but woe to anyone through whom they come. It would be better for them to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. So watch yourselves. If your brother or sister sins against you, rebuke them. And if they repent, forgive them. Even if they sin against you seven times in a day and seven times come back to you saying, 'I repent,' you must forgive them." The apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." And Jesus replied, "If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted in the sea,' and it will obey you. Suppose one of you had a servant plowing or looking after the sheep. Will he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, 'Come along now and sit down to eat'? Won't he rather say, 'Prepare my supper, get yourself ready, and wait on me while I eat and drink? After that, you may eat and drink.' Will he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, 'We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty.'" When we tend to come to Jesus, when we tend to have this idea of what faith looks like and understanding how we want to function and action and take decisive action in the world, we tend to have this laundry list of reasons that we can't do things. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money. I have too many kids, so my house is just always going to be dirty. Or, you know, I don't have enough leadership, or I don't have enough people working for me, or this and this and this. And we just don't do this with our faith. We do this with everything in life. When we're trying to make a decision about something, when we're trying to start a new habit, I can't work out today because I have this going on or this going on. And something always gets in the way, and we make these excuses that maybe I could be more effective if I just had this, or maybe I would be a little bit happier if I had this in my life. We do this with our faith too. We say to Jesus, "You know what? If I only had a little bit more faith, then maybe I could accomplish the things you're asking me to do. If only we had a few more people in our church, maybe we could accomplish the mission that you've sent us on. If only I had a little bit more money, and then we could get these things and all of these things would come true that you have been waiting for us on." Notice how that puts us in the center. Notice how we look at that and we say, "You know what, Jesus, if only you give me more, then I would be able to accomplish those things." Jesus, with his famous "faith as a mustard seed" quote here, reminds us that it's not about how much faith or money or talent or time or energy or the size of your building or the size of your congregation. He reminds us that it's not about those things. It's about what God can do through us and in us when we're willing. And that seems to be the case with our faith, is that are we willing? Are we willing to do the things that faith asks of us? There is an importance in forgiving the people around us in our Christian walk and in our faith. And Jesus is saying this in the first half of this passage. He's saying, do you understand that as Christians, as followers of me, you are going to be required at times to forgive people that you don't want to forgive? You're going to be at times required to step away from the situation. At times, you're going to be required to not understand what you were doing and asking of other people, but you're just going to have to do it, and that is your faith. This is an unavoidable duty of our Christian life, of our discipleship to one another and to the community and to the people in this room and the people that are not here. That when we are faced with offenses, our call is to rebuke and to forgive. And that's the call of a faithful disciple. And in light of that, the disciples look at that and say, I don't know if I can do that. I might be able to do that if only you could increase my faith. I might be able to give more money to my church if only you, God, would give me more money in the first place. We might be able to increase the size of our congregation if only, Jesus, you would give us a bigger building to do it from. And we could do all of these things. God, we're just waiting for you to do these things. We're waiting on you to increase what we already have. The life of a disciple demands daily tasks of forgiveness and prayer and service, period. That's the end. That's the message right there that Jesus is trying to tell us. Your life daily demands of you forgiveness and prayer and service. That's the life of a disciple. And in staring down that, the apostles looked at Jesus and said, I don't think we can do it. Increase my faith, please. I don't think I can be in service and be in forgiveness and be in prayer every day because I don't have enough faith to be able to look my enemies in the eye and forgive them. I don't have enough faith to go every day in prayer and pray for your will, God, on my life. I don't have enough faith to walk in service to the people around me. So, Lord, if you could just please, this one time, I won't ever ask again, I promise. Would you please increase my faith? But Jesus doesn't do that, does he? The God that we worship, the character of God, he does something different than what we ask and require. Jesus teaches us that the smallest faith can lead to impossible outcomes, like the uprooting of a mulberry tree. In Matthew, we know that famous phrase, you can say to this mountain, mountain, throw yourself into the sea, and the mountain would go. So Luke's faith is just a little mulberry tree. Matthew's faith is we can move mountains. But the principle is the same. It moves the same way. Effectiveness of faith is not in its size, but in its authenticity and its source, which is Jesus himself. It's not that we have more faith, it's what we're putting our faith in. And despite your perceived limitations, we could say something like, genuine faith is sufficient for overcoming life's challenges through Christ's strength. Our genuine faith is sufficient. Man, that changes our prayer, that changes our posture, that changes how we live in the world today, because all of a sudden we can't start making excuses anymore. We can't act like the apostles and say, you know what, I will do all of those things. I will forgive my enemies. I will be in service to my neighbors. I will be praying for the things I'm meant to pray for. If only I had a little bit more faith to do those things. If only I had a little bit more time, as if there are other important things that we ought to be doing. And Jesus says, you know what? We don't need a laundry list of things that you need anymore. You have faith. You have enough faith, because a faith the size of a mustard seed is sufficient for overcoming all of life's challenges. And I think we get stuck as people in Western society in this illusion of more faith. We feel like we need more faith. We need more of something to do more work. We feel like we can, if you just increase our faith. And so the disciples imagined faith as a quantity issue. That if only we had more, we could do more. And Jesus doesn't affirm that. He redirects it. His response dismantles the myth that more faith equals more power. That if I just, maybe I wasn't healed, maybe my parents were not healed, maybe I didn't get that job because of, or maybe my sister, or maybe something else, just because I wasn't a good enough Christian. Maybe I didn't have enough faith to do these things. And we've said that. I've said that. You've said that. And Jesus is asking you to say, stop going in that direction. Because more faith does not equal more power, as if we want more power for ourselves. Faith the size of a mustard seed is more than enough, not because of its size, but because of the one in whom it rests. Any wishful thinking on our part that if God would just give us more faith, we would be able to do more things for God misses the point entirely. That we've been given sufficient faith. To me, it's like we treat faith like a gas tank. You know, some days my faith is low, and if I could just get to the Phillips station and fill up my car, I would have more faith, and that would be able to take me farther in the day. But I don't think that's the way it is. I think Jesus treats faith like a key. You either use it or you don't, and in this case, a very tiny key can still open a very large door. It's not powerful, it's not flashy, but the right key can open a huge door. You don't need a bigger key, you don't need a bigger gas tank, you just need the right key. You need the right key at the right time, and that is faith. When placed in the right hands, in God's hands, faith can open doors. Faith can lift the mulberry tree. Faith can move mountains. Because it's not in our hands. It's in God's hands. And so we start to look at understanding in this way. The understanding, the posture of faith. He said, so you also, when you have done all that you were commanded, say, we were unworthy servants. The Greek there is a little bit confusing. Unworthy, sometimes it's translated as worthless, but it actually might also mean not needed. As in, we don't have anything, or we don't need any more things. We have everything that we need as servants. And I chose this translation because some translations will say slave, some will say servant. I think servant's a better use of the word here. Because Jesus' use of the metaphor and the servant's relationship to the master, it doesn't really advocate slavery, but it models the posture of humility and duty in the life of faith. In fact, we might say something like the true work of faith is obedience. We want to be obedient to the master. We are the servant, and we want to be obedient to our master. And Jesus' whole point in this section is to say, you know what? You've done the good work. Your faith has given you the opportunity to do the good work. There isn't anything more that you need to do. What is it that you think you need to do? The master is telling you to do the work of faith, forgiveness and prayer and service to one another. What more do you think you need to do? You've done those things. Jesus is not saying that we're called to do more than is required. We're called to do what we can do with our faith. Karl Barth reminds us that Jesus himself is the Lord who came as the servant. Christian faith is shaped by his humility before it becomes our humility. And so the point is not our value being diminished, but that we don't bargain with God through faith. He owes us nothing, we owe him everything, right? That's the position. And so then all of a sudden in our prayers and our saying, increase my faith, I don't owe that to you. I don't owe you an increase of faith. I've given you faith. How are you going to use it now? And isn't it interesting that when we pray, we say, Jesus, if you could come and if you're here with me, then I could accomplish so many great things in your name. And that sounds good on the surface, but that again puts us in the center. Instead, we say, you know what, Jesus, I cannot do this at all. I am ill-equipped. I am underserved. I'm confused. Come and do this, God. Come and do this for us because we don't have the ability. Is that the prayer for the church that you have? Do you say, Holy Spirit, come and anoint this church so that we can grow bigger, or we can have lots of people, or we can reach the neighborhood? No. That's us centered. God, come and use this church in the way that you want. God, come and use us as people in the way that you want, because we can't do it. We can't make this thing work. It's not ours, it's his. And if we continue to have faith of forgiveness and service and prayer, because the true work of faith is obedience. It's obedience in those things. It's not saying, well, gosh, if we could just have a little bit more, then we could just get a little bit more, and then we would be okay there. The posture of faith is not, look what I did for you, God, but I trust you and I obey. And so what is God calling you to obey? What is that thing in your life where God is calling you to obey and to say, if you can handle this, we can open great big doors. If you just follow me in this, my will for you is to hand this thing over to me and we'll move a mountain in the process. What is that thing in your life? What is that thing that God has been in your head about? In your prayers about, in your scriptures about, in your music about. There's a common theme that keeps coming up, and it keeps coming up in your head, and you say, gosh, that must mean something. In the early 1800s, the great William Carey, the English Baptist missionary and pastor, didn't start out very big in his life. He was a shoemaker from England, but he said, expect great things from God, attempt great things for God. And so what did he do? He stepped into the mission field in India, despite his humble and poor beginnings as a shoemaker. There was widespread skepticism, and his faith was met with suffering, but eventually, as he stayed humble and obedient in that action, it led to profound transformations in India. And Carey's journey teaches us that faith isn't passive. It compels us to act boldly in pursuit of Jesus' calling, illustrating that a genuine desire for more means embracing the uncomfortable and trusting in a greater purpose. Do you want God to increase your faith? Then step out into the unknown. Step out into action for God. Do it before you're ready. Do it before you're motivated. Do it before you're inspired, before God fulfills his plan. before you receive that giant check from the state because you won the lottery. You want to increase your faith? Just give to God where you are right now. Faith expresses itself in faithful action. That the more that we go out in faith, the more that we do in faith, the more our faith is increased. Notice how it's not the other way around. The more our faith increases, it allows me to be more faithful in my action to the people around me. That's biblical. I'm sure it is somewhere. I'm sure it says that somewhere. I'll find it. But I'm just waiting for God to bless me. I'm just waiting for God to come down and give me a sign that this is the thing that He wants me to be doing. You felt that way, haven't you? And the ability for us to grow our faith, we just say, well, I'll wait on you. I'll wait on you, God. Faith expresses itself in faithful action. Stepping out of our comfort zone, stepping out of that wave and saying, you know what? I'm just going to be obedient to Jesus in these few things, and I want to see what happens. I want to see if that door is open to me. I want to see how my faith and my life and my strength increase from that. We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty. And Jesus isn't shaming the disciples. He's setting them free. This is liberation for someone this morning because He's setting them free from the pressure to prove or earn. I don't need to prove myself to God. I am a faithful child of His. And here's the thing that I decided a while back is that I didn't want to be known as a great pastor. I didn't want to be known as a great church planner. I didn't want to be known as anything except a faithful child of God. That's where my heart is. And if I'm known to people in the community, I'm known to people in this church as a faithful child of God, that's the model I want to model for you. I want to be a faithful child of God in everything that I do. And if I'm a bad pastor and this is a bad church and all of those things fail, that's okay because at the end of my life, at least I was faithful as a child of God. And that's the only place that my identity rests. Not in any church that we can grow, not in any pastoring that we can grow, not in any way as a father or a husband or a son. When it's all done, my identity rests as a child of God. And I don't need to prove anything else to God. I don't need to build big churches. I don't need to have giant congregations. I yell at my children occasionally. And I don't need to prove myself to God and say, well, no, I didn't mean to do that, God. I really am a good father. It doesn't work that way. The more we try and prove and strive and say, you know what, I need more and more and more in order to be worthy to God, we've missed the point completely. Do you want to be known as a faithful child of God? Do you want to strive for more? Is there more that's out there for you? Is there something else that you crave in your life? Or is that it? God, don't increase my faith. Help me keep my faith. Help me keep my faith squarely centered in who you are. See, when we can shift from performance to posture, peace follows. I like all those P's in there, don't you? When we can shift from performance to posture, peace follows. Because that tells me that I can relax in who God is. I can receive Him and not have to feel like I need to perform for Him. And that is a huge shift in a mindset for us. That our posture of faith is occasionally on ourselves. That we feel like we need to build that up. We need to have more faith. And then things will happen. Things will grow. Churches will be built. My ego will be satisfied. But when we stop performing and we shift into a posture of faith, our peace will follow that, because all of a sudden we've stopped performing. We've stopped having to prove or earn anything. And God says, you've done your duty. You've done what I've called you to do. We can rest in faithful obedience without striving to impress or manipulate God. Jesus uses that servant-master parable to illustrate that our works for God are part of our duty without seeking accolades. We need to reframe our understanding of service, seeing it as a humble response to God's grace rather than as a means to earn favor. And people will think all the time, well, it's, you know, it's grace, it's faith, it's, you know, not by our works. That's right. You're not getting into heaven because you're doing better things, but you're doing better things because you already have faith, because you're already there, because you want to bring the kingdom near. It's not to earn favor or reputation or recognition. It's to say, I have faith, and here's what I can do with it. And I don't need more of it. Faith's freedom is this: when I trust God fully, I don't need to control the outcomes. Faith is not a ladder we climb to reach God, it's a door we open. Even when it seems too small or unassuming, we step into the life God is already offering us. So, let's land this plane. Let's figure out how we can do this. How do we participate in the servant heart of Jesus? Well, this is it right here. The posture of faith is humble trust. That's it. That's all I have for you this morning. It's not a five-step program. It's not do this and your life will be better. It's actually do less. It's actually be a person of humble trust. We serve not to earn a place in God's household because we already belong. But do you notice that faith participates in Jesus' identity, the servant king? Humble trust, the act of a servant. There's a saying in our leadership classes we take, we say, you want to know how you're doing on servant leadership? Watch your reaction when someone treats you like a servant. That's not a place that we go to easily. You wanna see how you are doing as a humble servant of Christ? Watch your reaction when you're treated like one. And all of a sudden, oh wow, I did not react well in that situation. There was no trust for me in that situation. We live in faith not because we have it all, but because we trust the one who does it all. Jesus reminds us that true kingdom, power, and glory belong to God, and any wishful thinking on our part that if God would just give us more faith, we'd be able to do more things is so totally wrong. The reality is we have all the faith we need to do great things for God, or more correctly, to allow God to do great things in, with, and through us. Because that changes the conversation, doesn't it? God, I have enough faith, so I'm now going to go and do things for you. And that flips it. That misses the point entirely. God, I have faith that you will do something great through me. And it may not be what I think it's going to be. God, I have great faith that you're going to do something through this church, and it might not be what we think it's going to be. God, I have faith that you are going to do great things through me in my neighborhood and in my family and in my workplace. And it might not be what I think it should be, but it will be what you want. And I have the faith to allow you to work in me and with me and through me. You don't need more faith to begin. You need to be humble and you need to obey. And have confidence that Jesus is walking with you.